Hello, and welcome to the Whole House Podcast, where you can find home, health, and family all in one place. Our team is comprised of moms from different upbringings and backgrounds, and we each have different passions and giftings and strengths. We each represent a different room, and we all make up the whole house. So grab a cup of coffee and join our overly caffeinated ladies here for the Whole House Podcast.
Hi, and welcome to the Whole House. Today it's Kathleen, and I have a special guest, Kylie Gray, and she is on the other side of the country. So the time difference was a big deal just trying to get this set up, but we're doing it. So welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. For the month of April, our focus is life. So we're focusing in April on pro-life and especially on adoption and foster care. And that's why I asked Kylie to be on the podcast. So just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I'm Kylie Gray. I live on a small little farm out in Central Oregon with my husband and our three boys that we recently adopted within the last 2 years. I met my husband in college in West Virginia at Vermont State, and we are college sweethearts.
Wow.
So we spent some time apart, and I lived in Oregon. We were friends for about a year in college, and then I ended up moving away. And so we dated long distance for 3 years, and I did YWAM, and he was in college still. So then after that, we got married and lived in West Virginia for 3 years, and then right back to Oregon.
Wow. Well, that's great because I didn't know some of that about you. I mean, I knew that you met him here at Fairmont State, but I didn't know the rest of your story. So you're originally from Oregon?
Yep. Oregonian. My family came over on the Oregon Trail originally.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing. That is amazing. Yeah. I love stories like that. I love knowing where we came from and how they got there. I know my family came from Ireland in the 1800s to Virginia, which became West Virginia. So, yeah.
You're a native West Virginia.
Actually, no. I was born in Missouri.
Okay. I did read your book.
But yeah, I call myself a West Virginian. So let's get into our first question, which is, what led you to adoption?
Well, there's lots of ways. It's kind of a whirlwind. I had some family members that adopted and did foster care, and it was always like, oh yeah, that's really awesome. And then I did about 4 months in a city in China with my veteran group, and we worked in these orphanages, and it was just extremely eye-opening. And the same with my husband. So we moved to China, we went on different missions. He went with Chi Alpha and I went with Wawa, and he worked in orphanages too, and it was just really eye-opening. And I remember on our first date, we had been friends for like a year, but on our first initial date, he was like, I just have a heart for adoption. And I was like, me too, man. And so
wow.
We were talking about it, and we thought originally we would go back to China and possibly adopt from China, but the more we connected with my family members being adopted out of the foster care system in the U.S., we just realized that there's such a need here in our own country, and so we just felt that to actually adopt them right out of Oregon, and that's what we did.
Wow. Well, and that's so true. There's just, you know, there's a foster care crisis in our nation. There are so many kids who need permanent homes, and there's a lot more tied up into it, but I won't go into that because then I'll get on a soapbox and be talking for a long time. But it's really interesting because my story is similar in that my husband and I, from the time we got married, we knew that someday we were going to adopt. We didn't know how, where, or when. We just knew. And we just had a heart for adoption. And I usually tell couples who come to me and say, you know, well, I want to adopt, but my husband doesn't want to, then I say, well, then don't, you know, wait until you're in agreement.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you're preaching to the choir. If my husband and I weren't on the same page, I think it would be, I can't imagine bringing an adopted child into the home. It would be, it would just tear you apart.
Right. It would. It would tear your marriage apart. I mean, it's hard enough on your marriage to have children and to adopt children anyway, you know, in general, because the focus shifts from your spouse to your children a lot. And so if someone's not in agreement with you, then you're not on the same page and you're not going to have the same ideals and the same ideas of what you're going to do with your time. Because
yeah,
you're,
it would just be a mess.
Right. So if you are listening and you are like, I've always wanted to adopt, but my spouse doesn't want to, then just my advice is just pray, but don't do anything until you're both in agreement. Because
agreed.
You really don't want to go down that hole and be stuck.
You need your spouse. Like, nobody else understands what you're going through as good as your spouse. And if I didn't have a supportive husband during this, or a husband leading me through this, I think we would just crash and burn. Our marriage would fall apart. It's just horrible, horrible.
Yeah, same here. And I know that I tend to be the more emotional one in our family, and my husband is the more steady, more just sees the facts kind of things, which sometimes irritates me, but is really a good thing, because when I would have a really bad day and just be like, you know, these things went wrong and this child did this and this is hard and I don't want to do this anymore, he would be a balance to me, just, you know, get me to my upstairs brain where I'm thinking, okay, this was an incident that happened today. This is just something that happened. It's not something that's going to be the same every day, which it never was the same every day, which I'm sure you know. It's never, you get one thing going right, and you're like, oh my goodness, the child is regulating in this area, and they're doing this, and it's going great. And then the next day, it all falls apart.
Oh, you preach into the choir. I definitely, you were like, you feel awesome. And then bam.
Right. Right, that regression just sneaks out there again. Yep.
Yeah, totally.
Which really leads me into my next question, because I definitely have a lot to say about this, is how has adoption changed you spiritually?
Oh my gosh. I was talking to my mom about this last night, and I was like, I feel like I just need to stay in every way possible, because I grew up in a Christian home, and I know who the God was, and I know the Lord, but I don't think, I didn't know who he was until I went through this adoption journey, because I was on my faith praying to him daily, multiple times a day, just to get through the day. And
right.
He really taught me what it meant to abide in him. And for, I was previously before this, I would just go about my day and, oh, well, the Lord, he's with us, whatever. But then, as soon as this adoption came, it has been like a ripple effect in my entire life of just seeking him and just being present in him as I walk through my day. Now, don't get me wrong, there's some days where I'm just like, oh, can't do it.
Right.
Or my flesh takes over and I just won't do it. But when I'm in him and I'm seeking him, I feel like it just owns my whole family, and it's just changed our whole entire lives. My children, I can't imagine if I wasn't seeking the Lord through this adoption.
Right. I feel exactly the same way. And like you said, you read my book, so you know, like, I went through some serious growing up during my adult years, because when I had three biological children, it was like, go to the gym, you know, drop them off at school, or, you know, drop them off at the babysitter so I could go to the gym. I'm still selfish. Please don't get me wrong. I still have a selfish core, but I was so totally selfish, and I didn't see it. I did not see what I mean, it was like, oh, Lord, give me a great parking place at the mall today. It's going to be, you know what I mean? I was just, there was no depth to me. There was no depth.
Agreed. The same for me.
And the depth first came in running in the bathroom to pray and crying, like, Lord, I don't know why you picked me. I think you chose the wrong person. This is, I can't do this. This is too hard. And there are 7 kids right outside the door. There was no getting out of it. It's like, Lord, it's sink or swim. And I had just, it'll be a while then when this is released, but I wrote an article about how large families helps you to have, learn how to have joy during trials. And I felt like after we adopted, it's always like death by paper cuts. It's always one thing after another, after another, after another. There's no, like you see on TV commercials, the family sitting on the couch together, just everything's peaceful and everyone's laughing. You get a moment here and there, but it seemed for a long time just to be organized chaos. And if I didn't have God, I think that God gave me an extra dose of adrenaline for a whole year till my body acclimated, because I could not do what I have done. In fact, a friend of mine who's just reading my first book for the first time, she caught me at church on Sunday in the bathroom. She's like, how did you do all that? And I said, honestly, it was by the grace of God, and that is the only way that I was able to do it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. I don't know how people do it without God.
I have a friend right now. I'm like, if you don't know the Lord, I don't know how you're
going to adopt. Right.
I can't imagine it. Like, I'm sure obviously people do it every day, but I'm like, I can't imagine not having that hope and not having that relationship. It would be detrimental.
Right.
Which you hear a lot of families fail and they send these children back into the system a month or a year later. And I sympathize with that, because going through what I went through, you have those thoughts. Like, it would be a lot easier to go back to your normal life. But that's not what God had in store for us. And so we trudged through, and it was one fucking year. And I know exactly what you're talking about when you say that year, that first year, man. We're coming up on our
right.
That time this is about will not happen for 2 years. And so this year has just been night and day different compared to the first.
Right, exactly. Because you're finding your footing. And the other thing about having Christ in your life is that you have a different perspective than the secular world, because I knew there was hope and healing for my kids. I knew that, and I wrote out scriptures that I prayed specifically for each child, and I knew that God's word did not return void and that it would accomplish what he set it out to do. And now that my kids are adults, or most of them are adulting pretty successfully, I see that in them. I see the result, the fruit of those prayers. And being a Christian gives you that tenacity because of Christ, that you believe that there's something better for them, that he can heal their broken hearts and all the trauma that they've been through, that God can use it just like he used my trauma to open my heart to children that have had trauma in their lives. I mean, does that make sense? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. I understand that 100%. I mean, I've seen what he's done in my children over the last year and a half, 2 years, and it's evident in every way. And you can't help but believe in the power of prayer and the power of scripture, because of just looking at my 3 boys.
Wow. And I love the pictures of your boys. And I think what you do on your farm is just amazing, because that's one of the big points about kids who have had trauma in their lives, that getting outdoors and working with animals and just being able to move their bodies a lot is so healing and helpful. I don't know if you've heard of Joyce Sterkel before. She has a ranch in Montana that's for kids who have been their adoptions have failed or they've had some sort of crime where their parents send them there. And that's what they do. They have a ranch. They work on the ranch. They take care of the animals and they do their chores and they begin to find some healing that way. So I think what you're...
I haven't heard of her, but we do have something similar here in Oregon, Crystal Peak Sioux Ranch, and they do the same type of thing with just horses.
Oh, cool. Oh, that's awesome.
I've actually been in court, like, at least my one children is really that dumb, but nothing is, like, it's, the farm has been, I've always wanted a farm again. I grew up on a horse ranch in eastern, I grew up randomly throughout the United States, but in eastern Washington, we had a horse ranch. And ever since I was a kid, I was like, I want my own little farm, I want my own little farm. And then just in the last year, since we've had the boys, it came into fruition. And my oldest, especially, he has this, like, I don't know, transformed with the responsibility we gave him and the purpose he has and his little, he does his little egg business where he feeds the chickens, he cleans out their poop, he makes sure they have water, and then he sells the eggs for $3 a dozen, and then he gets to keep, he
wow.
makes their feed, and then he keeps to keep the profit. And so currently we have, sitting like 20 feet from me is our egg incubator because he's hatching out more chicks for the season so he can get great more money.
Wow.
Just the responsibility of doing them is just, it's been amazing to watch him change.
Yeah, it is just so amazing. Yeah, that, and kids need to work. That fallacy that we have going around in our culture now is that kids, you know, need to be waited on, and that's not true. I mean, they need to be secure and they need to be loved, but they also need to work. And so what you're doing is just such a great thing. And I love your post about how they go and buy their Legos, because that's what my kids always did. When they earned some money, it's like we had to go buy Legos. And it's still a tradition in our family, the Lego thing. In fact, my grandsons, Sam and Theo, came over on Christmas Day. They had Tupperware containers in hand, ready to open their presents, trusting that they were getting Legos so that they had something to take them home in. But I just think that's such a great thing. And it's kind of funny. I mean, I thought that you were doing that. That was your purpose, that you were doing the farm and all of that because it would benefit your kids and you knew how that would benefit them. But I just think it's great. I love it.
No, the farm is definitely it gives me purpose.
Right.
I feel so close to the Lord when I'm out collecting dull and eating and doing everything. And gardening, that's where I feel the closest with the Lord. I just see him and all of that. And bringing my children alongside of it has just been an accidental miracle, I guess.
I like that. That's an accidental miracle. Yeah, and that's helping them so much. So if someone is thinking about adoption or foster care, what are your two best pieces of advice?
Okay. Well, we did go over one, so I will modify. One of them was make sure your spouse is on board. And then my biggest piece of advice is prayer. Prayer, especially leading up. So we were praying before we even, while we were going through our home study, while we were going through the foundational courses that are required to adopt through foster care.
Mm-hmm.
And just praying. And then we were like, we might get these three boys. And then we were just praying. And every time I talked out, I would go to the Lord. And I'd walk away. And each time the Lord met me, and I would leave renewed and assured. And knew that's what we were supposed to do because, I don't know, it's not typical for a couple who has never had children to go ahead and adopt three children that are older out of the foster care system. That's not normal. So
right.
Your fear comes in. And I think without prayer, I wouldn't have done this at all. And then prayer, when we got the children, just like praying over them, walking with them, praying with them. You couldn't just pray.
Right. I think that's, I mean, I think that's a phenomenal piece of advice, because often, especially if you have the kind of personality that wants to serve or help, we often just, you know, if you go to an adoption seminar, like a thinking about adopting seminar, then you can get emotional about it and think, I'm going to do this. But if you don't have any foundation in prayer, then you can be stepping out into something that God has not called you to or prepared you for. But when you step out in prayer, and I know I had the same experience, every single step we had to go through, like there was this holy leading. I think about that scripture in Proverbs 3, where it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. And throughout the adoption process or fostering, you have to acknowledge the Lord first and pray first. Because if you don't, you don't want to get yourself into a situation where God is not covering you or leading you. And it's amazing how every single door for us opened at the right time. Not my time, because my time was definitely different than God's. Yeah, and not the way that I thought it would happen. In fact, I remember asking one of my college roommates, she and her husband adopted a sibling group of three a couple years before we adopted. And I asked her, I said, can you tell me, like, tell me every single detail, because I like to be in control of everything that's going to happen. And she said, no, I can't. She said, in fact, I'm not even going to tell you everything, because your story will look different than mine. And you just have to let God be in charge. And I was like, no, I don't want to. I want to know what's going to happen. But mine definitely looked completely different than hers, because they also adopted in Poland. But because the kids they adopted were younger, they were allowed to actually take them out of the orphanage and let them live in an apartment with them. And we didn't get to do that. We had to live in the orphanage. So I'm glad she didn't tell me every detail, because then I would have been like, wait a minute, I want to do that. So, yeah. But prayer, definitely.
Yeah, going through it because I wanted that so bad. I wanted to know somebody who is crazy enough, like me, who has adopted three children at the same time that's never been a parent before.
Right.
Nobody did it. So I didn't have anybody to tell me what the heck was going on, or some the little things that happened to them. The classes, all people that I knew had gone through it. It was like years and years ago. They didn't know how anything ran. But I feel like now it was purposeful, where the Lord was just like, you have no one to go to on earth, so you must come to me. And whenever you're fearful or doubtful or insecure of what to do, you come to me. And I see the beauty in it now, but then when I wanted to control everything, I did not like it at all. But since then, I have a friend that adopts three boys that are my boys' age. So,
wow.
It's right in our little community. And she adopted 2 years before I did, but I just hadn't found her yet.
Well, and I'm sure, like you were saying, that was God's intention, because I felt the same way. I mean, I knew my roommate, but she didn't live near me. And it's kind of like after we adopted, because we, you know, adopted a sibling group before, which is like totally unusual also. And I felt like after we adopted, like the next year when we went to an international adoption picnic in our area, and there's all these people there with all these multiples. And I'm like, where were you when I was? But I think it was the same thing. God wanted me just to depend on him. And there's nothing like, and I know that you and your husband have both traveled outside of the country, but there's, and you know, there's nothing like traveling to a foreign country and knowing that you are not in control of anything at all. Nothing. Because you could be scooped off the sidewalk and thrown in jail and nobody could do anything about it. And not that adoption throws you in jail, but adoption's like that. You're thrown into this foreign environment where you don't speak the language and you don't know the lingo and you don't know what the next step is. And if you don't have God and you don't depend on Him, I just don't, honestly, I just don't know how you do it. I really don't. Because it's just...
Yeah, I don't either.
Would be
I do want to tell you something.
Okay.
And it was, you had, I don't know, one of my friends just put us in contact, I don't know, a couple months after I had Boy Sibling. And I don't know if you remember this, but you messaged me and you told me, you sent me this article, I believe you wrote it, about the trauma brain and how getting down there and playing with them really just transforms. It really rewires, helps rewire their brain.
Right. Yep, I do. I do.
Okay, so that day, I went, we have this little big, what we call big beach, like a mile down the road, and we went, and I got in, and I was just playing with the boys. And I feel like that was a transforming moment in my parenting. And that was, like, during our extremely difficult period.
Wow.
The first couple months. And I just wanted to thank you for that piece of advice because it transformed the way I was dealing with it because I was stuck in a, they call it fog, and I think all adoptive parents or foster families should be aware of the fog because my parents are actually fostering a teenage girl right now. My mom said that she was so thankful that I had been open about the fog because she's going through it right now, and it's just like you're so bombarded by all things new, and these children have come from such hard places that you're kind of just going to survival mode.
Yes.
And I, getting down and playing with these children, it took a matter of like a week or two, and the fog, I felt it like lift off my brain. And it was just like you put things in weird places, you were in autopilot, you were just doing what you needed to do to get by. But getting down and playing with them, I feel like it transformed them into being able to be more relaxed in our home and to just really honestly do what the article said. Rewire their brain to get around some of the trauma to be able to cope. And so thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome.
And really connect with my children.
You're welcome. I'm glad because, and you're so right. I think one of the reasons we get in that fog is because we're looking at so many of the big things in our lives and in their lives. And I remember just, and I still do it sometimes, is just thinking about the things that my kids have gone through and just start crying and just be like, well, I can't do this right now. I'm fixing dinner. I don't need to be thinking about what has happened to them and carrying all that when they're sitting there waiting for some sort of connection or some sort of reassurance. And that's why I think that just getting down and playing with them, I mean, it's scientifically rewires the brain, but it also helps us to just focus on the now instead of just focusing on the bigness of the whole picture. And
mine
that
was partially that, but a lot of it was partially myself. Oh my God, I felt the entire room twice today.
Right.
And so feeling internally feeling horrible for myself for what I had been through. And so putting my brain off myself also was a big, and just playing with them, putting it, giving my attention back on the Lord and back on the children in a positive manner.
Right. And well, and I think that's a big struggle for moms everywhere in our picture perfect culture. Because, you know, we get so wrapped up into having all of our counters wiped down all the time and having our house clean all the time and, you know, all those kinds of things. And I love to do that. I like to keep my house clean. But that's just a thing. And when we focus on that thing so much and then we begin to pity ourselves that it, like, one of my sons, like, his big thing was as soon as I cleaned the whole family room, dusted it, cleaned it, and I'm like, okay, now it's picture perfect. He would bring out this big bin of Legos and just dump it all over the floor. It'd be like,
that's my
kid. And it was just, my flesh would just want to rise up within me. But it was at those times when God was whispering to me, which sometimes I ignored because I'm just a human being. But when that's when God was saying to me, oh no, I'm going to cry. He felt so comfortable in my home. And this is when he first came home. He was 7 then. Mm-hmm. He felt so comfortable that when he thought I was cleaning the area for him to play Legos. Like, that was his thought. And who was I to say, oh my goodness, you can't mess this up. I just cleaned it up. And it is, you know, and there that goes back to the spiritual question. How does it change you spiritually? Like, a lot in every way. And I had just posted something today about being, you know, the problem with ourself is it's always there. It's always hanging around us. It just won't leave us alone. And it's... go ahead.
I don't know. I'm just agreeing. I just feel that way so much. The Lord will just bring up just a little moment, everyday moment, just when you just really see how selfish you are and if you allow the Lord to change you in those moments.
Right.
That's the key. But don't always want to do that.
Right. Well, and I would say, because I had asked you what your best pieces of advice were, and I would say that if you're thinking about adoption or foster care, then be prepared to have your flesh have to die more than your neighbors, even than the people at church, even, because it's a different kind. It's not, you know, you're not raising neurotypical biological kids, and I'm not trying to separate them and saying that they're different, but they've had trauma. They've had things happen to them. Mm-hmm. That's going to require more of your emotions, more of you physically, and more of you being proactive and planning ahead when you know what their triggers are. So it's going to just, right. It's just going to be a constant thing, and you need to be prepared for that. And when some people are in the honeymoon phase, because I've talked to lots of people in their first week of bringing the kids home, and the kid's happy, everyone's happy, they're all smiling, and then 2 weeks later, those same people are texting me saying, I don't know what went wrong, I don't know what's going on, the child's melting down all the time, he's angry all the time. It's like nothing has happened except the fact that the child feels more secure, so now you're going to begin to see where he needs hope and healing.
We didn't get a honeymoon phase. It was just 0 to 100 day one. But the thing, my cousin and his wife adopted a couple months after us. And I remember when they first got their child, they were like, oh, this is great. He's doing great. No behavioral issues, nothing. And then, but it took them a good 1 or 2 months. And then, bam.
Right.
I remember it was a tough road from then on, but it took a while. But with us, they were just kind of, it was a different situation also for us, because our twins, we have identical twin boys, and they were separated for a whole year before we brought back together. So not only did we take them from their foster family, but we also got together again. And so twins right off the get-go were just a little
white. Right. Well, that makes sense, because they were separated from each other, and identical twins have a really, really strong bond. And I just can't imagine, because I have twin grandsons, and they have a super strong bond. I mean, I think they read each other's minds, and they know what each other's going to... Yes. Yeah, they have their own language.
They need their twinny time. They'll go upstairs and be like, all right, Mom, we're just going to go up and have some twinny time, okay? And like, okay. And sometimes their older brother is like, they won't let me play with them. They said they need twin time. And I'm like, no, I think they do.
Yeah, that's how they are.
And I'm like, how on earth did you guys manage? And they didn't. The reality is their foster family had a horrible year, because I'm sure it wasn't all horrible, but like they had a tough year with them, and I think it would have been a lot easier had they have kept this identical twins together. It would have simmered down throughout the year instead of getting worse.
Right, and I think I know it's difficult for people to imagine, but it probably would have been easier for one of the families to take both. It would be easier to have two than to have one when they're identical twins.
I agree. I know. But so we had to deal with stuff. And we get still comes up every now and then, some pain from that. You can see it in one of their faces. And I think they were angry at each other, so they took it out on each other.
Yeah, well, that makes sense, too. I mean, because usually the, especially when kids get older and they're struggling with their identity and adoption and stuff, like my kids usually blame it on me, which is pretty normal. They blame it on the mom instead of anybody else. But in a situation with twins, I could see where that bond is. They would blame it on each other. And it's displaced anger when they blame it on each other, because they really want to blame it on the source, but they don't even know what the source is. And it's right. Kind of like adoptive kids who are blame their new mom. It's really meant for their biological mom, but they can't, you know, they can't go there. So you just have to take it. That's what I always would tell my kids. Well, you know what? I can take it. Especially the youngest, when he would say things like, you know, mean things to me and wait for my response. And I would just tell him, you know what, bud, I can take it. I'm used to it. That's not really going to faze me. It's okay. I'll live.
My older, he went through a very hard time when he came. And he was just our little contrary child.
Mm-hmm.
Anything he said, he was in his office. And he would just say the meanest things or do the meanest things. And I would just say, all right, I can take this. I can do it. And I would tell him that. And he would just look at me with the honest little eyes. But now he is, I'm telling you, power of that child is change.
Well, and it,
I feel like as little as he is, you go out the door to take him.
That's awesome. But and then also brings a whole new meaning to suffering for Christ. When you think about, you know, you are suffering, you're sacrificing your emotions, you're sacrificing your right to be angry or to be hurt for your children. And when you're saying, you know what, I can handle it. I might cry later. But you're not going to see me because I'm doing this for the right reasons. I'm doing this because you need to feel loved and you need to feel secure. Because one of ours used to do that for years. I mean, it was just constant, like, is almost as if they're saying, everyone else has abandoned me and you will too. So I'm just going to speed up the process.
Right.
And when you reassure them and reaffirm, like, you know what, I can take it. I remember telling this particular child, like, you know what, we're not getting rid of you. That's not going to happen. You're stuck with us forever. And he would get angry for a moment, but then you could see this relief come over his face because that's what he really needed to hear. It's like, we live in opposite land with these kids. You have to do the opposite of what you... Yeah.
And that is one of the hardest parts. Like, okay, I want to do this, and this would be a normal reaction. But
right.
I cannot do that. I have to, in the brain, it's just like, he doesn't know what to do. It's extremely difficult to just stop and think, okay, I need to do the opposite. Not, oh, I didn't always do the opposite. I just messed up frequently. But the times where you do realize what you need to stop and do, it makes a difference.
Right, it does. Yeah, and I'm definitely not perfect. I still do the wrong thing sometimes. So please don't, like, you know, if you're listening and you're like, wait a minute, these girls have it figured out. Not at all. And so to wrap this up, I didn't really give you a heads up, but I always kind of ask a question. Since we're focusing on life this month and we're focusing on pro-life, what do you think that adoption says about pro-life? Do you think that they go together or do you think they're separate?
Okay, this is really funny. I am about to publish a new blog post today exactly on this topic.
Oh my goodness.
I am This is not normally me. Normally, you know how I write. I tend to speak. Crack jokes and just tell you what serious stuff that happened, but in a funny manner. And so this was like kind of not what I thought I would be writing about, but it just like hit me hard. I don't think you can be pro-life if you're not pro-all-life, is what I said, had called it in my blog. Because these children in our country are, I go into a little story and readers can go over to my blog and read it. About my children, and I don't share very much at all about before we got our children, but I do share small stories. And if these children are starving, they're neglected, and then they enter the foster care system, and that, even if being a foster parent, or if you can't be a foster parent, if you can help a foster family or adopt a family by praying for them, letting them cry on your shoulder or doing something, that's still pro-life to me, and you're helping somebody who can do it. And you cannot be pro-life and not support adoption and foster care. In my opinion, it goes hand in hand.
Yeah, I agree.
There's laws going on right now that are heartbreaking, and we can't do anything about it, but what we can do is we can help the hundreds of thousands of children that are available and free for adoption in the United States.
Right. I totally agree, because I did write an article about that and about the new laws and what can the church do? You know, what's our responsibility? And I was like you, that I knew that God wanted me to write this article. I thrashed all night long the night before I wrote it. I was like, I told my husband, I was wrestling with God all night. So I was like, I totally believe it. I totally believe it. Don't get me wrong. I just didn't know how to say it. And I didn't want to write the wrong thing. And it's in our culture now, we're very offense-based. People get offended if you say the sky is blue. And I wanted it to be something that was going to bring encouragement and bring life, because you can be pro-birth. But if you're not pro-life, like the rest of their life, then where are these kids supposed to go? Because 53% of children born in our area are born addicted to drugs and alcohol. So where do you think they're going? They're not going to, if they do go home with their birth parents, it's not going to last very long. They're going to be in the system. So, and especially if a woman is making a difficult decision, like, I am going to go through and birth this child because I've listened to what you all have said to me, but what happens next? What happens next for me?
Who's going to step up?
Right.
And I'm almost certain it's everywhere, but especially in Oregon, some of the accommodations for these children aren't great. And
right.
As you look at the situations of a foster family, and you're like, man, they would have just been better off to stay with their bio family. But if we can rise up as the church,
yes,
how amazing would it be a country with no orphans and with no children? There's always going to be foster children, but to always have a clean, loving placement for them to go. Even if it's just for a week, a night, an hour. I feel like we need to rise up as the church and just love on these children.
I agree. I mean, that's what James 1:27 says. We're supposed to care for the widow and the orphan. It's a mandate. It's not a suggestion. And I know that not everyone can foster and not everyone can adopt, but everyone can support someone who is adopting or fostering children. And I think that's super, super important. I'm on a task force called the SHIELD Task Force in our area. That's one of the things that we're going to be working on this year, is trying to get some of the adoption and foster care law changed. I probably shouldn't be saying this on air, but I'm saying it anyway because it's so important to me. That will favor the child. And that will make sure that the child is taken care of. And it will also give some authority to foster parents, who often have no authority to do anything. So, I mean, that's kind of my heart, is that I think that a lot more people would foster if they had a little bit more authority and were able to act as parents.
Yeah, and that is the hard part. With that's in Oregon, and I've come across a lot of people who contact my blog or by Instagram or whatever, and they're from a different state, and their state where I am is completely different than it here it is in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And with us, so you can go into the adoption foster care world and fully go in to adopt children out of the system.
Okay.
So, and I know, like, in different states that's not always the case, but I know it is here, and I believe it is in Washington, and I think in California, where you can sign up, go to these foundational classes, just like you would if you were in Boston, but you need to get your home study done, it's for adoption, instead of general foster care. And then you get access to the pool of children who are zero parental rights attached to them, and they're ready to adopt.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Because I feel like sometimes in our area, it's foster parents become like a way station where the kids are there for a very short amount of time, and then they try to do the reunification, and that fails, and then they go to a different foster home, and then they try reunification, and it just drags out for years.
Yeah,
and it just...
My kids were in 13 foster homes in the year and a half that they were in general foster care.
So wow.
You have that until they get to that point of adoption. So, but for families that are like, oh, I don't know if I can handle general foster care, there is another way to still adopt through the foster care system.
Right. Right.
And
well, and
every state, I believe, but it could possibly be way off.
I definitely feel for bio parents who are in dire situations, but I also think that if the child is important, which he should be, then his rights should come foremost instead of dragging the reunification process out for so many years. Because that just harms the child even more.
And in some cases, it's great to have relationship with bio parents, and in a lot of cases, and in our case, it was definite for the child's safety. It's just like they shouldn't have even had this to begin with, and they did. So it used to be a real case by case issue.
Right.
Some children I shouldn't be allowed to have this, and that should be cut off in the beginning, but they always allow it typically.
Right, I agree.
You have to do the worst. Now, even if you did the worst thing in the world, don't let you visit your kid if you have supervision.
Yeah, I agree. It should be done on a case-by-case basis because the child's needs needs to be the most important thing. And I don't know what that looks like as legislation, and I hate more government. I mean... We have enough government, but if it's going to help a child. But anyway, I don't want to get all political, but I just want to thank you for joining me today. And it was just me today.
Thank you for having me.
And Kylie will have an article, and I will post that on the Whole House so that you'll get to read a little bit. And tell us where we can find you on social media.
So I have my blog, and it is Black, White, and the Gray. Gray spelled G-R-A-Y. .com. The Black, White, and Gray .com. And then on Instagram, same. Black, White, and the Gray. That's where they can find me.
That's awesome. And her pictures are amazing. So, and I love the picture of, who was ice skating? The little one, 2-year-old out there ice skating on your pond?
That was my niece.
Oh my goodness, I love that picture so much. So anyway, I'm going down a rabbit hole. Thanks for joining me, and we will see you next week on the Whole House Podcast. Bye.
We're so glad you could join us here for the Whole House Podcast. Please subscribe, and if you give us a review, we might pick our favorite and send you a prize. Please remember to like the Whole House Facebook page and follow us on Instagram at the_whole_house. And please, please sign up with your email on our website, thewholehouse.org, to be notified when new things are happening here at The Whole House. Thanks so much for listening.